This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Sean Malarkey, who was living his dreams through... who is making his dreams come true through digital entrepreneurship. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thanks so much for having me on, Joe. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Glad we could finally get our schedules right here.
So
why don't we start by giving some background about yourself?
So my name is Sean Malarkey. I live in Santa Barbara, California. I have a digital marketing and publishing agency. Essentially what we do is create, publish, market, and sell, fulfill trainings or digital trainings, primarily in the marketing space. And most of our stuff is social marketing related. So if you want to learn how to use your fan page on Facebook for marketing or LinkedIn or YouTube, name it, we probably have a training on it. So I guess that's it. That's what I do.
So what would you say digital entrepreneurship means to you?
So here's the thing. Freedom is the big one, because essentially I can run my business. Since it's not traditional or brick and mortar, I don't need a location. So it's given me the ability to move from the Midwest. I used to live in Ohio. It's given me the ability to relocate out to California. Because it is online and digital, a lot of the business is very systematized or automated. In other words, while I'm sleeping, people are purchasing our products and buying our stuff. So we're earning revenue while we sleep. So for the most part, I have a lot of freedom in the sense that I can do what I want when I want. There's very few things that are deadline driven or time sensitive. My life's so, you know, we're done with this interview. It's the middle of the day here. I don't really have anything that I have to do between now and when I'm going to quit working. So if I wanted, if I got a call from my wife who's at the beach right now with the kid and said, come down, it's gorgeous, I could, for the most part, 95% of the days can stop what I'm doing and do what I want. For another great example is last night, I wanted to go surfing this morning because I'm going to be traveling for a few days and be away from the ocean and want to get in the water before I left. And I knew I had pretty packed day today. So last night after the kids went to sleep, I spent about an hour and a half and knocked out what I would have done this morning so that I could go surfing this morning. To circle back or to bring it full circle, to me, it represents freedom in a way that, you know, most traditional businesses don't have or don't see.
Yeah. I mean, that is a great, great amount of freedom, especially since you don't have like a brick and mortar type store or location.
Yeah. And it's not that you can't do that with a brick and mortar store, location, or business. I know plenty of people who've done it. On my podcast, have featured a bunch who've done it. So it's definitely not possible. It's definitely possible, but I think it's just a lot easier to kind of create that business if you can find something that's digital or something to do online.
What would you say inspires you?
Oof. I don't know, man. Life. I don't know. I love just living, I guess, life to the fullest. And I don't mean like, it doesn't mean like going skydiving and doing extreme stuff. For me, it's just about enjoying, you know, enjoying life. So I could probably generate a whole lot more revenue than I do now if I worked a lot harder. But for me, you know, what's important to me, I have a couple daughters and a wife, and I enjoy doing a lot of things outside. So for me, those things are the priority and the things that inspire me. And the work, I love the work I do, and that's inspiring as well. So it never really feels like work. But I definitely don't work nearly as hard as I could or am capable of, and not because I don't want to, but mainly because, to me, what makes me happy is not necessarily money or doing better. I'm already doing great. Like, I'm great by my standards. I'm very happy and financially comfortable. So for me, it's more about just, you know, enjoying life, I guess, and spending time with friends and family and doing the kind of things I like to do.
So how did entrepreneurship come about for you?
It's such a good question. We were just, well, having a discussion recently, and I started early. I had a paper route. My mom was an entrepreneur, so I got to kind of watch her do everything. And I don't know. I don't necessarily. When I was young, I was really into skateboarding and snowboarding, and I thought I would open up a skateboard shop or a snowboard shop. To me, that was like the ultimate. And then as I got older, you know, I just didn't really have any desire to do that. I don't really know. I mean, for me, I knew I wasn't going to go to college, Joe. I knew I wasn't going to be, you know, I just never was a good student in the sense that I got good grades. I would always get, did whatever I did, kind of just to get to skate through school. School is more of a social thing for me. So I think, you know, post high school, knowing I had some dreams to be a professional athlete and chase those for a little while. But I just knew, obviously, that I had an inner drive that I wanted to do pretty well financially and live a really good life. And I guess entrepreneurship was really the only way to kind of achieve that for me that I could see early on. What's funny now that I think back on is I got into the mortgage or loan origination business in the late 90s when that was starting to really slowly but starting to pick up, and rode that way for about 10 years and then decided I needed to make the jump and become an entrepreneur.
So how was it received by your family when you got out of school and you decided that you were going to start doing things that would allow you to live the life you wanted to live without, say, going to school for more or live the 9-to-5? Especially, I guess, moving from Ohio to California was probably a pretty big deal. How was all that received by your family?
Yes. So it's funny. When I was graduated high school, it was either for me to go to community college in Columbus, and I snowboarded a lot, so, or I could go somewhere where there was snow. So I decided to go to Lake Tahoe to go to school. You know, my parents, to be honest, Joe, and they're both great, and I love them, but I just don't think they really cared too much what I did. I think they had confidence that they knew I'd end up all right, no matter what path I chose. So, because I can never really remember, like, oh my God, you dropped out. They weren't supporting me. I was an adult. You know, I was supporting myself. So I wasn't using their money. So it's not like they could cut me off or anything. But I don't ever really remember them getting upset or disappointed. And my mom was primarily the one that was involved, and my parents were split. I didn't talk to my dad too much at that point. But I think she was excited that I had the balls to, like, at 18, pack up and move across the country. And she knew I would have an amazing time and experience and grow and learn a lot. So she was super supportive. And then after a few years, I came back and kind of got my feet wet in the mortgage business and did pretty well with that for a number of years. And then when I made the jump to become an entrepreneur, but I did so with somewhat of a safety umbrella in that I had a couple of business partners that lured me in to work with them originally, agreed to pay me a certain salary if I would come and help them, almost like a startup, you know, like getting hired by a startup. So I was a third owner in the company, and I walked, you know, away from a comfortable job where I was, you know, originating loans to kind of a startup environment, but I was making a decent salary, one that I was happy with. So it wasn't very scary or very difficult. When it became scary and difficult was when I decided to make the leap from that business to doing what I'm doing now. For the first year, it was very challenging and very difficult, but I had an amazing supportive wife who, you know, agreed with every decision and everything. And I think, you know, looking back on that, Joe, I think it's just the power of communication. So she was aware of everything. You know, we talked all the time. We were good friends, and she was aware of, you know, the challenges I faced in the current business that I was in, and then what kind of potential might have been in the business that I moved into. And I'll never forget, like, I got a card from her on the first day, and I had at that point a young 3-year-old, and she was just saying, like, how proud of me she was and how supportive she was. And she knew that I was going to be successful, and she was grateful that I was willing to take the risk. And all. Just something really sweet, you know. I have actually somewhere over there, but anyway, so yeah. So I have been fortunate to always kind of have the support of those around me. The last final move from Ohio out here a couple of years ago was kind of hard for my mom, but she comes out here a couple times a year and stays for extended periods of time. Each time, so she still gets to see us quite a bit, and she just wants me to be happy ultimately, so she's happy about the whole thing.
Well, I mean, it is really awesome when you have the support of family and friends, and especially a wife or girlfriend who believe in you enough to not just say that they believe in you, but take that ride with you.
Right. It was a ride, Joe. We probably almost got divorced 3 different occasions that first year.
Well, the first year is the toughest.
Yeah. It was really tough. I always tell people now, you know, I don't know the answer. Is it better to to just jump with no parachute, or is it better to, you know, to sew your parachute first and then jump? You know, for me, it's like, I know kind of where I want to be and where I want to live, and nothing will stop me from getting there. So I like the high pressure situations, but I never would recommend that for anybody else, because I don't know if they can handle it. You know, like, and I always tell my friends that want to get out of doing whatever they're doing and doing something more for themselves from a business standpoint, I'm like, do it in your spare time. You need to learn how to hustle at your job, and then also when you get home, and work 80, 90 hours a week. And if you can do that for a year and you can get your little side business, you know, growing and making revenue, then cool. That jump won't be as, you know, potentially detrimental.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good to start when you have that safety net in place already without ripping it all out and then just jumping.
It is. Then you, I go back and forth, because then some people, like, the thing that drives them to succeed is knowing they don't have the safety net. So I always just kind of warn people, like, you know, this is what I recommend and whatever. I have a friend right now recently who left a really amazing job for one of the world's greatest companies, didn't build a safety net first, and now he's kind of frustrated and wishing he had.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the safety net can hold you back in a way that you don't try as hard because you know that, hey, I'm still going to get that paycheck.
Yeah.
Regardless of how well or not well I do.
Exactly.
So why don't you go through some of the steps that you took when you got out to California and started your own business? What steps did you go through?
So I was actually still in Ohio when I started it. It was super stressful. We didn't kill it out of the gate, but I left a six-figure salary from the company that I ran, and almost in the first year was able to build it right back up to that. But, you know, the first steps were executing on ideas that you had, and the original idea I had was not what I ended up doing. It was kind of a secondary idea that I had. I started, at the time I was in real estate and thought I would get into selling digital trainings all based around real estate. And I was blogging as a hobby because I just wanted to work on my writing more about Twitter. And I was just kind of addicted to Twitter and spending a few hours a day on there growing a following. And it actually got to the point, about the time I started the blog, I was in the top 500 of all Twitter users on top most followed accounts. And I can remember, like, with like 80,000 or 100,000 or something followers, and Ashton Kutcher and Larry King were racing to a million. And it's fun. Just, I kind of chuckled because I've seen a lot of like hip hop artists or actors or just musicians get on Twitter and within a week have a million followers, or 2 weeks or 3 weeks and whatnot. But I started blogging about it because people were like, how do you grow such a following? So I was like, I'll just create this blog, my Twitter experiment, and teach people what I'm learning about growing a following and tools I find and blah, blah. And within like a month, it was getting, I think the first month it had over 20,000 visits or uniques. And then it was averaging over 1,000 a day. And so while I was working on my real estate training, I thought, you know, I'll just create an ebook. I've been writing out for this blog for a while. Anyway, so I created an ebook, and then that started generating a few $1,000 a month. And then that kind of launched, you know, at that point people were like, oh, you're an expert, you've written a book on the topic. And so that kind of launched me into doing what I'm doing now.
It's funny how easy it can be for people to perceive you as an expert when you're like, nah, man, this is just what I do.
Yeah. I mean, I did know probably more than, like, you know, 99.9% of the people that use Twitter about Twitter, but it only took, I don't know, 3 months of spending several hours a day on there and, like, you know, reading blog posts about topics and tools. And at that time too, it was very early on in Twitter's existence. So there wasn't that much out there and there didn't have any competition really. It wasn't actually cool to say you're an expert at Twitter at that point. People were like, oh, you're a guru. And there was like this big anti, you know, thing. Anyway.
Well, how were you making money at that time?
So just mainly through the ebook, man. I think the first two or three months, I generated about 10 grand. I was living off savings and credit cards. And then I partnered up with a guy named Lewis Howes, and he was doing a similar thing with LinkedIn. Are you familiar with Lewis?
The name sounds familiar, actually.
He's started a podcast that's doing pretty well called The School of Greatness. Him and he was doing the same thing with LinkedIn. So I said, you know, we should throw a webinar and market it to our audience, our respective audiences. And we'll do a joint webinar talking about LinkedIn and Twitter. Your audience will like what I have to say and vice versa. So we did, and we decided at the end we would sell our books. We had 3 ebooks. We put them together in a package for, I think, $79 or something, which back then ebooks were like $100. Kind of think that the landscape kind of changed a little bit. That also came with some extra like video trainings and stuff. But anyway, that's what we were going to do. And we got a lot of people on the webinar, and we ended up selling 1 training, I think. Maybe not even 1. I think it was 1, though. A couple weeks later, we went back for round 2. And in the meantime, we studied on how to convert, get better presenting and all this stuff. We ended up doing like 13 or 14 grand or 12 grand, somewhere around there, the second time around. So, which was more money than either of us had made in the previous 2 months combined, or close as far as splitting that 13 grand. So we were just like, oh, this is great. Let's just do webinars every week and we'll be rich. And pretty much that's what, that's kind of how it played out. It's not that smooth and easy.
Well, I mean, what's the biggest roadblock you've hit along the way?
Maybe organization. For me personally, I have a hard time with organization. So by not being organized, I think it's cost me a lot of time, money, and opportunities.
And how have you overcome that?
I don't know that I have.
Well, how do you deal with it?
So, you know what? It's funny. I'm being half sarcastic, but half serious. I have a calendar that has like 2 things on it a month. It's like podcast interview and podcast interview. I don't know. I mean, mainly I think just through hiring good people to handle like all of the important tasks in the business so that my lack of organization doesn't affect those areas. So when it comes to taxes and money and accounting and all that stuff, I got a great person that handles all of that. And then anything that's super critical in the business, there's somebody else in charge of besides me.
Well, I'm guessing you're making quite a bit of money to be able to not, you know, to have that problem.
Well, I lose a lot of money by paying people to do it, but then I don't have to do it myself. And it's not that I don't want to do it. It's just that other people are better at like being really organized and task oriented and calendar driven. And so I'll let them do what they're strong at. And, you know, we all win. So I think when we work together as a team and we're organized and whatever, I mean, for me, it's, and I'm not like the big vision guy or whatever, but yeah, that is my role. And I'm like, I operate best in that, but I'm not afraid to get down and dirty and answer customer support tickets and pick up the phone, you know, whatever. Like, I'm willing to do all of it. I think my employees know that and see that. So it's not, people are pretty happy. So
that takes a lot of skill and self-awareness. There's a better word for it than I'm giving it, but to be able to delegate, you know, to have the power to delegate and to actually delegate instead of just doing it all yourself.
Yeah, for me, it's really challenging. I'm going through now. I just hired somebody for a pretty critical position. And I always feel like when somebody starts, they should start in support in our company. Because, A, that way, if we ever have a support person out, that we have somebody available to answer all those, you know, if we have somebody sick, we have somebody else in the office who can jump in. They know all the answers and everything. But B, it just gives them a really good overview of our business and kind of everything. Because support handles, it touches every aspect of the business from, well, you just name it. It touches everything. So I've been working with them, and it's, I almost want to pull my hair out because it's been 30 days of just a lot of time being demanded of me. And in hindsight, I should have had somebody else on the staff do that. So yeah, so it's great to be able to delegate and do all that, but can be a challenge for a lot of people because oftentimes it'll take you longer to get a task completed than if you just did it yourself. And that's what I've been experiencing through this training. It's like, oh, I want them to do this role for me, but I have to train them first. So I just do it and then train them, you know what I mean? So,
what's been the biggest disappointment so far?
That all of my ideas don't work. I'm kidding, but I don't know. Things never move as fast as I would like them to. And we've gotten, as an organization and a company, we've gotten extremely organized. So that part frustrates me. I always feel like things should move quicker. And yeah, so yeah. I don't know, man. I'm really grateful that for the most part, you know, a lot of home runs and not many major upsets or disappointments. It stinks losing great employees. That really stinks. I've had employees lured away by other companies and competitors, but I always understand most of the time it's a good opportunity for them to grow. But it just, you know, we as a company are pretty tight, so it's like a family. So that stinks. We lose good people. Yeah, so just the people side of things can be disappointing. And it's not ever like a negative. I don't mean that. But it's just like, oh, really? Like, we were building great things together, and now you want to go work for them. Okay, fine. You know, so that, I guess that's it, probably.
So if you could invite any three people to a dinner party that you are having, who would those three people be?
Steve Jobs, George Bush, and Obama.
George Bush Senior or Junior?
Junior.
It's a very interesting list.
I know. Well, you know, like, I think Obama would be cool to, like, talk to and learn from. I'm not really a strong Democrat or strong Republican. I definitely lean one way or the other, but I'm not going to get into that. But it would be interesting for me to communicate with that guy. I think Bush would be fun to pound beers with and then get him drunk and hear stories that he probably only tells when he's drunk. And he's actually, I think, a lot sharper than any of us think, because the media's done a good job of making him seem dumb. I have some friends. I had a friend that recently spent a whole day with him and said he was incredible. So I thought that those two would be neat, and Steve Jobs is an obvious one.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I think it's a great list. I think that you'd have a lot of great stories to tell from that party.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, you put it up on YouTube after the fact.
Yeah. Right. Turn it, make it into content.
So, could you share a favorite memory from your entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Would be that very first webinar, or the second webinar that I did with Lewis, the first one that we succeeded. I've had days where we've made over $100,000 in a day, but that little, well, not little, but that 13.5 or 12.5, whatever it was we made that day, was really the point in which it was like, okay, like, I see the light, this can work, I'm good enough, you know, I can make this happen, you know, all the affirmation I needed came from that day. And this is another one real similar. We did a webinar with an affiliate who sold $25,000 worth of a product that we had. It was a great day. And a couple weeks later, I was having lunch. I looked at my email and it was just blowing up with, you've made a sale, you've made a sale, you've made a sale. And I'm like, what the hell? To the tune of, I want to say it was like 45 grand. It was over 40, maybe even 50. And I was like, where is all this coming from? And I kind of drilled it all down and figured it out. And I called the affiliate. He's like, yeah, I just recorded that last webinar we did. And I just marketed it again. And I just played it back. There you go. I was like, wow. So just, you know, just a quick surprise, $50,000 in revenue that I wasn't expecting. Those, both of those days were just like, you know, kind of spoke to the power of what we were doing and the internet and what's possible.
Wow. I mean, it's like winning the lottery.
Yeah. They offset the calls and the days like I had Monday when I found out my taxes are due October 15th and the bill is actually going to be about $80,000 more than we anticipated. So it's like, oh, that's freaking awesome. So for every good day, there's a bad day, right?
Hey, yeah, yeah. You got to pay your taxes. But with that said, at least that's what your taxes are, man. Because you know what? You're doing it.
Yeah, well, yeah. And those surprises are not fun anyway.
So what do your dreams for the future look like?
It's a good question. So I'm really focused right now on growing my company and building it into a sellable company in that, not that I want to sell it, but that it's just fully automated and turnkey. So that there is value there. If, you know, if I can build it to where I think I can build it the next few years, I could have the option to sell. And I live in Santa Barbara, so I don't know that I could retire fully with that money, but I could definitely take a lot of time off and enjoy, you know, raising my kids and life a little bit. And I think we touched earlier, I've got an iPhone app that I've been working on for quite a while that it's getting close to being done. And I'm really excited to roll that out. I have a book that I'm working on that I'm actually not working on. I put off working on, but I'll be releasing a book the next year. So those are the kind of the things that keep me excited and have me motivated to push forward.
So you've given a lot of great nuggets of information, and it's just been a great interview so far. But do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share?
I don't know. I just, you know, I was thinking the other day, or just as I was just saying this, when it comes to happiness, I posted this quote on Facebook the other day, and as I was telling you, like, about the future for me, it was interesting because it really defines it. But It was a quote from Kenny Rogers, and he says, you need three things in life to be happy. And I should have prefaced this, but I think this is kind of happiness defined in its simplest form. And he says, you need three things in life to be happy. Someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. You know, for me, that's it. That's this, if you want to be happy in life, I think that's this, in its simplest form. If you're not happy, you're probably either A, don't have someone to love, or B, you don't have something to do, or C, you don't have anything to look forward to. So it's just, figure out those three things. And I think it's so true, especially all three are equally important.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think that's a great list of things. You know, if everybody had one of those three things or all of those three things to do or in their life, I think that it would solve a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's definitely true. So yeah, that's my little nugget. That's all I got.
Well, Sean, I would love for you to plug your websites and how people can connect with you.
Gosh, websites just like a lot. So I'd just say, just reach out to me on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you do message me through Facebook, just mention that you heard this interview and you want to connect. And then I'll for sure connect. I get a lot of requests. I don't accept everybody. But I feel like someone, if they took the time to listen to this whole thing, they're probably pretty cool and I appreciate them. So I'd be happy to connect.
Well, at least what's your Twitter handle?
It's Sean Malarkey.
Sean Malarkey. Okay. Yeah. All right. And any website address?
My site sucks. I need to update it. But SeanMalarkey.com is there. And then, yeah, that's... Oh, Instagram is another big one, too. I love Instagram. So any of those places, really.
Awesome. Well, I will have that little list there that you gave on the show notes at howtodream.co.
Awesome. And if you would mention the podcast, too, I'd appreciate that. That'd be great.
And what was the podcast name?
The Money Pillow.
Is that what you stuff your pillows with?
No, but it's just like the premise is that you can generate revenue while you sleep.
Sounds like you should be. I mean, I don't know if the IRS is listening, but...
No, believe me, they know everything, and I think I pay way too much in taxes, so pretty sure if I ever got audited, they would owe me money. I'm not kidding. And that happens, believe it or not. Like, we forgot to file this or claim that or... do whatever. So, but yeah, we pay so much. It's retarded. It's not a good word to say. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that, but it's just not fun. And I have all these friends that are like, oh, you should hire this account or do that. And I'm like, you know what? I can sleep at night. I play by the rules. It's all good.
Well, I'd love to have you on the show again in 6 months to a year and catch up on how everything you've been doing and follow up on all the greatness.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Hopefully we won't have as much trouble coordinating that one.
I'm sure we will, but we'll make it happen.
Definitely, definitely. Well, thank you again, Sean, for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real honor.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/DreamersPodcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.